Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to talk about the defense from that Ravens win over the Commanders on Sunday, 30-23. Much hyped battle of great QBs, and we certainly had a couple of good ones. We'll talk about them. Joining me to do that is Cordell Woodland. You know him from all over Baltimore and Washington sports at this point. He's a Commanders fan growing up, correct, Cordell?
I am. It's been a while since the Commanders have been talked about the way they've been talked about to this point in the season, especially when you hear people kind of amplifying the quarterback. It's been a long time since that's happened. So, yeah, different times, but it's a good time for change for sure.
You know, there was a time, and it was the 1980s and even into the early 90s, where it didn't matter who Washington put at quarterback. They were always good. Jay Schrader, you know, Rippon got put in at quarterback and won them a Super Bowl. I mean, it just did not matter because they had such a great offensive line, good skill position players to complement that. You could literally plug in almost anybody and they were successful.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the coaches as well. Joe Gibbs, one of the all-time winningest coaches. He's always had great staffs. I mean, he's won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. And like you said, I mean, the Hogs, everybody knows how great that offensive line was. They had receivers. Art Monk, one of my favorite receivers in Washington history. So, yeah, I mean, the history is very rich. Not so much to speak of in the last 30-plus years.
Yeah, it's things do ebb and flow. And one of the things I want to discuss with you is a little later on is whether it's actually a good thing that the Ravens have a regional rival. And I think the answer might actually be different between having the Commanders be good and having the Nationals be good, because I think having the Nationals be good is absolutely terrible for the Orioles. But let's put a pin in that for a moment. But I thought the defense in this game did a good job of forcing Daniels to throw. They shut down the running game. It was no Brian Robinson, of course, but they shut down a running game that it had been pretty good to date this year.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, the Commanders, a lot has been made about Jaden Daniels and what he's done in the passing game this year. But Jaden himself has been a big part of that rushing attack. Brian Robinson, like you mentioned, he missed the game with a knee issue. And even last week in the win over the Browns, he had the two rushing touchdowns, but only 13 yards on the ground. He didn't practice at all that week up until Friday, which is pretty much just walkthrough day. So I think it was pretty clear that knee has been bothering him. Not surprised to see him sit out this game. And I thought it made an impact. Look, make no mistake about it. The Ravens defense has their issues. Stopping the run isn't one of them. They're the best rush defense in the NFL right now. So I'm not going to sit here and say that if Brian Robinson was there, you know, they would have gone out there and rushed for 125 yards. I don't know that. I do know, you know, that it helps the Ravens for him to not be there, because it forces the Commanders to be one-dimensional with a rookie quarterback. Austin Ekeler and Jeremy McNichols, that's not going to get the run game going against that defensive front against the Ravens. So I'm not surprised to see them shut down the run, A, because they're a good rush defense, and B, simply because the Commanders didn't have their horse back there to at least make them play honest and kind of help out the play action pass.
Yeah. It was kind of an odd, I thought, game script as it went through. And it's just looking at a very high level that you know, the Ravens scored on five consecutive drives, and they still in that time did not put the game away. It was close to begin. They scored on five straight drives beginning the second quarter. The only drive, and then they didn't score in the last drive of the game when they put it away, when they sealed it up with a couple of first downs to win the game. But you would think that they'd be able to put the game away before then. But the Commanders, certainly pesky, continued to stay in it. Continued to fight and keep somewhere between 14 and 7 points down pretty much that whole time. And it was certainly an entertaining game. It was still a nail biter with, what, less than 4 minutes to go. So I thought, a good game and one, I certainly wish that the Ravens had been able to salt it away a little earlier, but it was another good test for them to be able to close out a game.
Yeah, I thought, it was a good challenge for both teams. Honestly, the Commanders hadn't played a team like the Ravens to this point in the season. And the Ravens to themselves, as everybody talks about the youth on that Commanders team. And obviously they're trying to turn the tide a little bit and get Jaden Daniels kind of acclimated in this offense and continue to ascend. And I thought the Commanders, what they do well, throwing the ball all over the field, getting splash plays. That's where this Ravens defense has struggled at to this point. So it was kind of a good match. I think everybody, Vegas even thought it would be a high scoring game. So I don't think anybody was necessarily surprised to see a lot of points put up. The Commanders defense is downright awful. If anything, I was surprised that they had as much success as they did early in the game, kind of containing the run game. I figured that they'd sell out to stop the run because Lamar said it best. It's a pick your poison offense. The Commanders, just like most teams, the Bengals did it the week before, they're going to most likely choose to take the run game away, because if you're going to let the Ravens run for 250 plus yards on you, you stand no chance. Now, Lamar obviously can beat you with his arm. I don't buy into the notion of Lamar can beat teams from the pocket. Everybody, I've seen enough of Lamar his whole career to know that he can. But if you got to pick something, you're probably as a defense going to say, all right, Lamar, I know you're great. I know you can throw the ball. I'm going to have to force you to do that, because you and Derrick Henry, if you guys are going to beat us, we would have no chance out there. So I thought the Ravens did a good job of taking advantage of that Commander secondary, picking on Benjamin St. Juice really all game. Mm-hmm. And when they needed to put the game away on the ground, they did.
You know what I was actually surprised by? Emmanuel Forbes has struggled in his year plus five games, that he's played so far, obviously. But one way to get right is to let a zone corner play zone. Okay. And he is the ultimate kind of cover three, come downhill, find the football guy. And I thought they would have him active for this game. To the degree they can afford to play zone, which is going to be on obvious passing downs, you can rotate in at corner on a by down basis, not a by series basis, and get him in there looking at the quarterback, have eyes on the football on third down. I thought that would have been a great gamble for them. They didn't go for it, which surprised the hell out of me. Did you have any feelings about that?
Honestly, I think they're done with him. I'm kind of done with him, to be honest with you as well. I mean, it says a lot when you see how porous that secondary is, and the first round pick, granted from a previous regime, just from last year, is a healthy scratch. And he's been a healthy scratch, I think, for the last 2 weeks. Maybe he did deal with an injury, but even since he's gotten right from that, he hasn't been back on the field. Jamin Davis, another healthy scratch as well. Mm-hmm. Another young guy on that side of the ball. So I think that's kind of telling you how they really feel about Emmanuel Forbes. He is his own corner. You're right about that. But he has not played on his instincts. I think back to the game where they played the Cardinals earlier this year. There are moments to where he could make a play and he sees the play and he hesitates, or it's like he doesn't trust himself. Something's off with him. And I just really think that this regime is kind of all the way out on him. So I'm really not surprised that he was a healthy scratch Sunday. And it wouldn't shock me if, unless it's an emergency, he's probably going to be a healthy scratch going forward.
There's got to be some team who would want him at the trade deadline. There has to be some team. And Washington is a team who, if you're truly done with a player like that, you either can get draft capital for next year or maybe a player from a team that's in a little more difficulty. And Forbes will be entering year three next year. So it won't, it's not like you have forever with him anymore to get him right. But man, would I love for him to be on the Ravens. Would I love that? Oh my God, they'd have a very good chance to turn around a player like that. It's not an ideal situation, never is in this kind of thing. But if you can get a zone corner right playing zone football, man, I would take that chance in a heartbeat, because the upside of Emmanuel Forbes is just fantastic, as we saw in college.
Yeah, in college, he seemed to be more instinctual than he has shown so far in the NFL. I think also his size has been a problem. A lot of people thought Nate Wiggins' size would be a problem. Nate Wiggins is a little more filled out, not very much so, but he's a little more, he's definitely more filled out than Emmanuel Forbes is, even
about
right
15
now.
15 pounds heavier,
Nate,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I even with Nate Wiggins being a rookie, Emmanuel Forbes is a stick out there. I mean, and he plays that way. He doesn't play strong with receivers. He's not a great tackler. So he does, I mean, he does need a reset. And to your point, if you're going to be done with a player like that, you think they move him. They did that with Josh Dotson this offseason, this preseason. They traded Josh Dotson in the division to the Eagles. And he was a guy that another first round pick had a great rookie year, but hasn't fit with what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do with that offense. They sent him to Philly. And if you're going to trade a receiver or any player for that matter inside the division, that in itself kind of tells you what they think of him. He hasn't done much in Philly in itself either. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with Emmanuel Forbes. And even Jamin Davis, like I said, he's another one that's kind of in the doghouse on that side of the ball.
All right. All right. We saw the Ravens continue to play a lot of dime in this game. And for the first time in an exceptional way, the dime was really successful in this game. We'll get to that a little later. But really liked seeing that happen. I've incredibly appreciated the shift to dime. And it's not that Trenton Simpson was playing poorly, because he's the guy who gets replaced when they go from this committed nickel look to a dime. They put in a new weak side linebacker, a dime back in the form of Hamilton. And then they put in multiple different people have been possible, but are either Ardarius Washington or Eddie Jackson or others to fill out that six-man secondary. The way that has worked out has was really good, and they played well in the second half. They played well, really the entire game playing dime this game. But the big subtle change in this was Washington moving to strong safety in the second half to replace Eddie Jackson. Not sure if you noticed it, but it's an enormous change, and it may presage additional changes for the Ravens going forward. It's if Mollett is coming back, and your take on Mollett coming back. I know Harbaugh addressed it today at the conference.
Yeah, he said that he's very hopeful that Mollett returns to practice this week. He thinks it's a good chance that he does. And I like Arthur Mollett. I thought he probably arguably had the best training camp of anybody in the secondary, probably next to Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah.
I definitely thought it was a huge loss having Mollett not be able to be on the field to start the year and obviously have that setback here within the last couple of weeks. I'm curious to see how he changes things in that secondary, who stays, who goes. I think Ardarius getting in more in the second half. Honestly, A was kind of overdue, and B maybe is kind of a sign of things to come as they start to get healthier on that back end. I thought Eddie Jackson had been playing a little too much for my liking to this point in the season. It seems to me that he shows up a little late a lot of times. He just seems like a step behind on some of these plays. He's not as reactionary right now as Ardarius Washington is. And I know he dropped the pick that hits him pretty much right in the neck. But it's something they've always liked Ardarius when he's healthy. Not surprised to see them give him a shot right here. And I think while Ardarius is a little smaller and you always have that threat of him himself dealing with injuries, because that's been the case throughout his career. Yeah. I think they like his instincts. They like how he plays the ball.
We saw him play all summer. I thought in the second half of training camp, when he was really healthy, that he was probably the best Ravens DB after Marlon. I think everything is after Marlon from the incredible, you know, summer he had. But Ardarius Washington really, he for the second straight year, he just completely won a job in camp. And people, I guess, don't realize how unusual that is. They usually have it figured out pretty well who they want to start the season with, who they want to figure it out. But Ardarius Washington has kind of forced himself into the lineup. And last year, great preseason, forced himself into being the starting slot corner after he's about their fourth choice. You know, they started with Brandon Stevens there last year at slot corner. They went through several other guys, Mollett getting hurt and other people, before they ended up with Ardarius Washington there. I thought Washington played well for a game and a half, and then he got hurt, of course. But I'm very happy that Washington is back there. I share some of the same concerns about Eddie Jackson that you do. He's a big gamble coming here, by the way. 10 yards per target allowed the last 4 years combined. He's not the guy who's obviously going to work out. He might be a Ravens type move in that you bring him in, you put him in a smaller role than being a true free safety in Chicago, and maybe he can adapt to that and be a useful player in a split field role. I really haven't seen that happen so far. And right now I'm looking at that safety position and saying they really need to find a guy who can play the back end well. Free safety, ideally, at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering Marcus Williams is having a down year to this point. I mean, that's been probably the most disappointing thing about the defense to this point is Marcus Williams, who I thought had a really good camp as well. I mean, and then it's like as soon as the season started, I'm still waiting for Marcus Williams to make a play, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think Eddie Jackson, honestly, in this situation that he's in, I think he's probably better fit as a box safety right now. But with the way they use Hamilton, it's just that's not the role that they need for him. Ardarius fits more of what they're asking Eddie Jackson to do right now. So, yeah, I'm not surprised to see that change happen on Sunday. And honestly, it wouldn't shock me if that's something we see more going forward.
Yeah, they stuck with Eddie Jackson in the big nickel. And I honestly think it was just a courtesy during that second half. And they shifted to Ardarius Washington as the strong safety in the dime, which, by the way, once you take somebody's dime responsibilities, it's not a lot of point in like giving them a little pat on the head and saying, well, you're still my big nickel here. You're still my back end big nickel guy. You took away the obvious passing downs from a guy who's struggling in pass defense. So that should tell him a lot. Ravens went with four defensive linemen active again, third time that's happened in six games. Amazingly, they got away with it again. Now, a lot of people have like been in a back and forth with me about being able to stop the run, and they thought they could do it with the four linemen they had. It's not just about that, because you play two defensive linemen every single play, and you can really tire out your pass rush if you have only two active. The Ravens have not played any three outside linebacker packages effectively this year. Now, when I say that, it's less than five on the season that five times they've done it. So they're always going with two down linemen every single pass snap. That's a pretty heavy load for four guys to bear. It means they have to average 50% of snaps.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the four defensive linemen, and that was Urban, Matabike, Jones, and Pierce. And yeah, I mean, we're talking about some big body guys. Now, Urban doesn't play as much as some of these other guys, and he gets in on special teams, but when it's only four of them, you're relying on Urban to kind of be a part of that mix. And I don't mind Urban getting out there. He's a big body guy. He gets his hands up there. He's really good at batting down balls at the line of scrimmage. So I do like him. It's something that has not necessarily anything I've given serious thought to, but it has kind of been a couple of like, that's okay. That's what we're doing when they decide to go with the four lineman active. Now, with Broderick Washington not being able to be healthy enough to play in this game, he didn't practice all week. Not surprised to see him inactive. And I thought their four-man pass rush kind of did what they asked them to do. It's not necessarily that they loaded up on sacks. They had three in the game, and I think they had eight quarterback hits as a team. So you'll take that against a guy with Jaden's mobility for sure. But I think their point of emphasis was not as much getting to the quarterback as opposed to keeping him in the pocket, containing him, not letting him get outside. And that's what John spoke to us about during his presser on Monday is, you know, he thought the pass rush did a really good job not allowing Jaden to make some of those out-of-pocket plays that we've seen him make. We saw that touchdown he threw a deep ball to Terry McLaurin last week against the Browns, where he gets out of the pocket, rolls out to his right, throws a dime down the field. He wasn't able to make some of those types of plays in this game. And if you look, every time he got out of the pocket, you did see somebody kind of chasing him down, kind of heckling him. He had his moments where he had time to throw, but I thought that they were okay because guys stayed true to their rush lanes, guys stayed true to their principles and didn't allow him to really beat them with his legs the way that he has done other teams.
Yeah, definitely. It was a very good game of containing him as a runner, and that's obviously something you want to do. He had some ATS opportunities in this game, his ample time space, and was very effective with them. So we'll get to that a little later. You know, it's a risk management perspective I don't like it from. I'm not happy. The Ravens won this football game. They held the Commanders to not very many snaps in the game. I think 56 total snaps defensively. When you do that, you're going to say, well, what are you talking about? We won. But it's kind of like flipping a coin and saying, see, I told you it was going to be heads. I mean, it's just it doesn't pay off. The risk adjusted return on this move was not good, because if you have an injury, you might lose a game to a team you're favored by 7 over. You literally all of a sudden you're going to be required to play, instead of all your guys 50% of the snaps, all your guys 67% of the snaps, when you're down to, you know, having two spots to fill by 3 guys. And that's just not where you want to be. You don't want to either have that come up and risk fatigue that gets you ineffective. And I would think Daniels would be the kind of quarterback who could really make them pay for that sort of thing. Obviously, it helped that, you know, the Washington did not take the bus trip with a heavy dose of their run game to extend the number of defensive plays that were in there. But there was two different stretches where the pairing of Matabike and Jones was on the field for 15 consecutive defensive snaps. And I really do not like to see that on my scorecard. It scares the hell out of me in terms of effectiveness.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely worry about fatigue, and then fatigue turns into injury possibilities when guys are out there playing tired. So definitely can understand it from that point of view. And like you said, I think knowing going into the day once Brian Robinson was declared out on Saturday, I think they understood what type of game plan Washington was coming in with. Maybe if Brian Robinson is healthy and they're expecting a little more of a balanced attack, because when he is there and they do stick to the run, they definitely will run the ball. So I think maybe it would have changed their thinking a little bit potentially. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern when you only go with 4 and you worry about a guy dropping off. Thankfully, that wasn't the case for them on Sunday.
All right. You know, one thing that the Commanders did not exceptionally well coming into this game was convert third downs. They were leading the league with 31 out of 60, 51.67%. And they only went 4 for 12 on third down. They did go 1 for 1 also on fourth down. So it's kind of like they went 5 for 12 really for the game. But good game for the Ravens getting off the field on third down versus an offense that certainly has a lot of options on those downs.
Yeah, I mean, and even if you want, you can throw in the pass interference late in the game on Nate Wiggins that ended up extending that drive as well. So, yeah, I mean, that and John Harbaugh talked about that in the post game. That was a big point of emphasis, kind of getting them off the field on those third downs. And they did a good job putting Washington in a couple of third and longs. That wasn't ideal for that Washington offense. I honestly thought that it would get Washington in a little bit of more problems, considering I don't think their offensive line is as good as advertised, but they do a really good job protecting Jaden. I'll give them that. And he does a good job, I think, of helping them out as well. So it kind of gives a little bit of a mirage of what that offensive line really looks like. But third and long is not ideal usually for a team with the offensive line that they have. So definitely a good job getting them off the field. Like I said, I think the third and longs helped out quite a bit. The fourth down, and that turned out to be a touchdown. I mean, that kind of obviously isn't ideal, and it's in the red zone as well. But I just think the numbers told the story one way coming into this game for Washington's offense, and I think a lot of people may not have really seen them, you know, and really understood what Jaden has been able to do. I heard a lot of talk all week about Terry McLaurin being the only guy that you really have to worry about. And to a degree, that's true. But you look, Noah Brown had quite a few catches on crucial downs. Zach Ertz moved the chains quite a bit. The X factor is Jaden being able to process so quickly and so well and so efficiently that, yeah, Terry's the one individual you have to worry about. But these other guys can at least semi get open. They have a quarterback that will find them. So when that happens, it does make you kind of cover every blade of grass, because you don't know where this guy is going to go with the ball. So I say all that to say that I think it it was a bigger, I think the Ravens understood the type of challenge that it was going to be going into this game to stop that offense. And I don't know if everybody else kind of realized it. They saw the numbers, but I don't think everybody necessarily has seen this offense enough to really understand how good they really can be.
Right. I would certainly agree. I mean, there was some probably legitimate reduction scaling factors applied to the fact that Washington hasn't played a big slate of games so far. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's what, but, you know, Jaden Daniels certainly looks the part. He looks like he is going to be a great quarterback, and he may already be there. I don't think we quite know after six games, but he certainly may already be there. Certainly looks like the second pick was not too early for him. The first pick might not have been too early for him. Caleb Williams also had a big day on Sunday, but yeah. Okay, so let's get back to the Ravens for a second. Then I have a question I want to ask you about the Commanders. What do the Ravens need to do? Is this defense good enough, coupled with the great offense that the Ravens have, to make a deep playoff run? Or do they really need to focus on making a move at the deadline? I would say probably for a safety. I don't think they're going to make an offensive line move at this point. I think they've got their ponies in the stable right now that they want to go with. I also don't think they're going with a wide receiver change, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. So I think it comes down to a safety, which is good because safety is a position you don't have to pay a lot for necessarily in terms of either cap or draft capital to pick up.
Yeah, I do think that they need to make a move at the deadline. What that move is, I'm unsure. And let me not say need to. I'll say I wouldn't be against them making a move at the deadline. I'll say that. I do think it should be a defensive move over an offensive move. I think offensively, they are right where they probably need to be. It's as balanced of an offense as you'll find. The run game is there, and they still have guys like Keaton Mitchell, who's going to be coming back at some point. I think that'll impact the run game in a good way. I hear everybody on Davante Adams and getting Lamar a true wide receiver one. I think Zay is a true wide receiver one. This notion of your wide receiver one has to be 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", and, you know, he's got to be this guy that's jumping over people to make catches. It's all the same to me. If Zay can use his quickness and his shiftiness and his twitchiness to get open and be unguardable in man-to-man situations, and he's making every catch and he gives you yak ability, what else do you need, honestly? Sure, you'd like to see him find the end zone, you know, but what else are you asking for? He's there for you in the scramble drill. And then even when teams do decide to take him away, Zay had a career day, second half, he doesn't even get the ball. But here comes Mark Andrews. Here comes Rashad Bateman. They have it to where, to this point in Lamar's career, he's only been able to get the ball to so many people. Usually two guys are getting the ball consistently in his offense at a time. We're watching him spread the ball around more now than ever. Nine guys had catches last week. This week, six different guys have catches. I mean, that's about where you want to be. So I love Davante Adams. I truly do. And I think he'd probably be the best receiver Lamar has had to this point. That said, I think this offense is fine where it is. Defensively, I'm just struggling to think of a safety off the top of my head that they could trade for. I don't know if maybe you have somebody in mind, but it's just I don't have anybody right now that I'm thinking about that they could go after.
Okay, so there is a lot of players who are playing free safety in the National Football League right now who are on bad teams that are not going anywhere this year that mm-hmm. could easily be traded. And not an unreasonable amount of them are still either on their first contract or they're towards the end of their second contract and are a player that the team would be okay getting rid of. So there's some money on the contract. The Ravens would have to compensate a team for the player plus draft pick compensation to take some of the salary back because the Ravens aren't really in a position to do any more of that. They've got so many players they need to sign. But the other thing about the Ravens situation is they kind of need a guy. If you look at this right now, I mean, I don't see Marcus Williams or Eddie Jackson being on this team next year. I don't see either one of them. Marcus is at a point where you can cut him and save some cap space. They need cap space like nobody's business. They probably are going to have safety as a very high draft position of need next year. So I imagine you will see one in the first or second round taken. They do not want to put Kyle Hamilton on the back end because it minimizes his value. It's not because he can't play well there. He can play reasonably well there. But why take him out of dime or slot corner where he completely controls the strong side of the football field when you know, if just to cover up for a hole you have. A great thing that could happen is Ardarius Washington plays well in the second half and he plays a lot of back end. And all of a sudden they say, okay, that's one of our possible guys, but they've got other guys they can go to the street for. I mean, at this point, I don't think Darryl Worley would be a big step down from Eddie Jackson as the split field guy. So you've got it. You know, that should be on the table. Obviously, Darryl Worley didn't make the team. He was there in camp. Eddie Jackson did. They've given Eddie Jackson some guaranteed money already, but I would have Darryl Worley back on the practice squad right now. Whether it's injury or whatever, I would have it back and ready to go. He didn't, I saw the same thing. He didn't look that great. He looked a step slower in camp, possibly. Where were you on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised that he didn't end up making a team. He did, like you said, he looked a step slow. It's not too much different than what Eddie Jackson is giving you right now, and I think that's why you're seeing Ardarius play more. I agree with everything you said about Marcus Williams probably not being on this team next year. I the way he's playing right now, unless something changes, it's still early in the season, anything can happen. But if he continues the way he's going right now, yeah, I don't see him on this roster next year. I do think in the offseason, safety will be a big priority. I just don't know if that's what they need, if that's what they'll go after at the deadline. And I don't know if, as bad as Marcus Williams is playing right now, is he the reason this secondary hasn't looked good necessarily? I don't know if that's the case, right? I think it shows up because he's back there. He's making a lot of money, and he's a guy that you have high expectations for, because before this year, we've all thought very highly of him. But I don't know if, now, unless you're talking about putting Minka Fitzpatrick or somebody back there, obviously that would make a huge difference on this defense. But I just don't know if getting a safety at the deadline changes things, just because we're talking about a deep center fielder type safety. And yeah, they've given up splash plays, but a lot of those have been kind of out near the really close to the sidelines, kind of right up the sidelines. In the middle of the field has been short to intermediate. That's been a big issue for me. That's probably their biggest issue, is the fact that Roquan seems to continue to get isolated on these receivers in the middle of the field. But if they're going to make a move at the deadline for a defensive player, I wouldn't be shocked, even though they brought Yannick Ngakoue in, if they go after a pass rusher or something like that. I just think pass rusher is always a possibility for a defense, and quiet is kept. Van Noy, who's having a good year, Van Noy didn't necessarily live in the backfield this past week. I mean, when you're a veteran player, you always have to have that concern of how are they going to look as the season goes on, especially as you get to the back end of this back end of the season. So I think pass rush is possibly something that's still on the table, maybe a corner as well. But I don't know what they're looking to do, but I definitely think if they're going to make a move, it should probably be on the defensive side of the ball, and preferably somebody that can help them make some game-changing plays.
With regard to the pass rush, I just don't know who you jettison to make a move. Right. You could trade David Ajabo as part of a move to get a pass rusher. In fact, you can trade David Ajabo as part of a move to get a safety, for that matter, if you wanted to. You're not trading Adisa Isaac because he's a rookie, and you know, obviously the team control component of it is too significant. You're not trading Yannick Ngakoue because you can't get anything for him. So even if you didn't think he was good, and he's played pretty well, obviously you wouldn't trade him for that. So I could see it happening. I could have seen Ajabo getting traded coming out of camp, but I think at this point, if I'm looking at a young player who might get traded, he's probably the one I would point to as being the more likely.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Than just about anybody else. Yeah, I mean, it's always possible that the team could, and this would really be taking a chance, but the team could trademark Andrews.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was saying I played with that idea myself. You know, could, I mean, they spread the ball around, like I've said, as much as they ever have. Mark, to his credit, just had his best game of the season as a receiver, caught the touchdown for the first time this year, and really helped move the chains in the second half of the offense. Granted, that Commander's defense is very bad, especially on the back, and everybody was running wide open out there. But I've thought about that. I mean, I think Isaiah Likely is ready. You know, I think Isaiah Likely is ready to step up into that big-time tight end one role right now. Lamar has the trust in him. I think the team does as well. And I think you could get something for Mark Andrews, but it's kind of the same thing you were saying about one of the other guys we were talking about. Like, what is Mark's value at this point? I think he's still a good player, but he's got off to a slow start to the years as a receiver. He's a veteran guy, not super old, but you know, he's a veteran guy coming off a year last year where he had a significant injury that cost him a big chunk of the season. I just don't know what they would be looking to get back. I don't think you're getting much draft capital back in return. Maybe a player, I could hear that, but what player and what position would be up for discussion?
It would have to be like a safety who's going to bring you value and is going to be an exchange of contracts. But there's an acceleration problem with the contracts. Both have to be terminated by the original club, and that creates additional cap load this year that would be difficult to handle. But yeah, I in a lot of ways, Mark Andrews is like Davante Adams. Is the $1 million per game that you have to pay for Davante Adams, you have to get over that hurdle first in terms of acquiring him. And I can't. I personally don't think he's worth $1 million a game, not to the Ravens, maybe to some other team. But not to the Ravens. But even if he's not worth $1 million a game, then you have to figure out, well, if I'm going to get the Raiders to eat this salary, why would they do it? They'd just be buying a draft pick for something. That's why, you know, you hear it thrown out there that Davante Adams is, if he's traded and the new team has to eat all his cap, he's probably worth about, you know, a fifth or sixth round pick. He's not worth anything significant. If the Raiders will eat everything, then he's worth probably a third round pick, and some team will do that. But Adams has the same problem. He's old. His future contract years are worth nothing. So because they're, you know, 35, 36 million, he makes the next 2 years. Obviously, he has to be restructured, which means you can either throw the contract away or try and use it to re-sign him. And you know, neither of those options is especially attractive for a 32-year-old wide receiver, from my point of view. We've gone over that a number of times on the show, by the way. I didn't want to do it more than that, but I do want to ask you, this is an important question. So you grew up in the DMV. And by the way, define for that what is in the DMV and what is not, because Baltimore is no way in hell in the DMV, right?
No, it's not. Actually, me and my fiance were talking about it the other day, because apparently she didn't know that Baltimore is not a part of the DMV. She thought it was. And I had to tell, like, please don't say that publicly, because people are going to question you a lot. You talk to out of towners, then yeah, I can understand that. They look at it as DC, Maryland, Virginia. So in their mind, oh, Baltimore's in Maryland. It's a part of the DMV. It's not that simple. I've heard people try to make it easy to look at when they say the DMV is wherever the metro goes. And that I could kind of understand because obviously it goes through DC. It goes through a little bit of Virginia and all throughout PG County for the most part and into like Silver Spring and stuff like that. So I can understand that. But for me, no, Baltimore isn't in the DMV. I think that's one thing Baltimore and DC does agree on is that Baltimore is not a part of the DMV. I think the DMV is, like I said, DC, PG County, maybe a couple of the outskirts. And a smidget of Virginia, but I don't think the DMV is as big as some people claim it to
Montgomery
be.
County?
Certain areas. Is Silver Spring considered Montgomery County? Or
I have no idea, actually.
I think Silver Spring may be considered Montgomery County, or it's kind of on the edge of PG County, but Rockville, all that type of stuff. Certain areas are DMV. It's very weird. It's like one of those things where in my mind, I know what the DMV is, but when it comes to explaining it, I'll probably talk in circles.
The other thing that bothers LME is the announcers talking about it being the Battle of the Beltway. It's the Battle of the Beltways, you dip. It could be that would be okay, but the battle of the Beltway is just so annoying because oh boy, you've been on the Beltway traffic. You know, there's not one Beltway. There's one Beltway that has absolutely the worst traffic nightmare in the history of man, and there's another Beltway that has its problems occasionally, but isn't bad at all. The Baltimore Beltway, I'm like, this is not one Beltway anyway. Small point, but annoying.
Yeah, I mean it's not a rivalry just yet. And we'll see. You know, when you play every 4 years, you haven't met in any Super Bowls. You play in the preseason. It's tough for me to build it up. So when people come up with the name of Battle of the Beltway, I think that it's kind of the low hanging fruit. But yeah, that's one of the things that kind of irks me as well.
All right, so here's the actual important question, all that we wasted a lot of time getting to, is Commanders seem to be in a much better position with the Harris group as opposed to Snyder in terms of where they're going. I don't think we even need to debate that. But does it help the Ravens to have a good team in D.C., or does it just end up costing the fans? Is it nice to have a regional rivalry somehow, or based on the Ravens' geographic, cone that they're in, that they have a limited number of fans and they're much better off with the Commanders being a crap franchise?
Well, yeah, I do think the Ravens, from a business standpoint, would love it if the Commanders were still one of the worst franchises in sports, because it's been quite the history is there with Washington. Yeah, they've had an identity crisis and have changed the team multiple times. Look, I think the last three times the Ravens have played Washington, Washington's had a different name each of those three games. So, it's been a lot going on with the franchise. And like I said, business-wise, I think the Ravens would love it for them to still stink because a lot of the Washington fans that have been there throughout the history, some of them jumped ship and went to Baltimore. And, there's obviously if Washington gets their act together, it's one of the richer, when they're good, they had a streak at one point of just consistent consecutive sellouts. So it was always a sellout for their games. And the team got so bad and all the off the field issues started to pile up that fans finally kind of cut the cord and they started to see it happen. You started to see them now have one of the worst attendance rates in the NFL. You start to see the stadium falling apart. The purchases going into the memorabilia and the jerseys and all that stuff is dropping. So I do think that there's something too, if this team really does get good again and people start to think that they're trending in the right direction, that maybe some of the fans that jump ship, maybe they'll come back. People that have been quiet about Washington, maybe they'll start talking about them again, wanting to go to the games again. And yeah, it will kind of make it so that the Ravens aren't the only ticket in town that you can go see good football played at. So I do think in that sense, there's something that I think the rivalry is probably more on the business side than it is on the actual football side right now.
And with revenue sharing, that is minimized in the NFL relative to other places. Mm-hmm. So maybe having a good regional rivalry is good in some cases, but they are competing over fans. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
With the baseball, I don't think it's a question at all. I mean, the Orioles have twice, you know, driven the Washington franchise out of town. In 1961, when the Senators moved to Minnesota, and then again in 1972, when the Senators moved to Texas, the expansion Senators moved to Texas, and then for a third time, they screw the Ravens franchise by bringing the Expos to Washington. Washington had a couple of consecutive number one draft picks that really worked out for them, and Harper and Strasburg that turned that franchise around in a lot of ways. But there is no redeeming virtue to me for Washington having a good baseball team. In fact, I think the two teams are pretty much locked in a death struggle of however many years it takes for one of them to have to go. So it's not like football at all, where you can share the market in a certain way, or you can, you know, what large, rich metro area you can share it, but you can't really share it for baseball. There's just not enough relative to what some of the other teams have.
Yeah, I think in a regular season, baseball, it kind of is what it is. It's a long, grueling season. So when you can look at any ballpark throughout the week, and you'll see a ton of empty seats out there. It's really, once playoff time starts, the line is kind of drawn in the sand. And, you know, that's when those seats start to get packed out. I think you saw with the Nationals, because, look, I'm a lifetime Orioles fan. I grew up an Orioles fan. It's all we had. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid. And so even once the Nationals came, I root for the Nationals as well. They're the home team. I loved it when they went on that run to win the World Series. I was at Steven Strasburg's debut. I love Juan Soto, even still to this day, never wanted him to leave. Hope he comes mm-hmm. back, honestly. But all that said, it's weird. I kind of think that they're, because I think back to, was it 2014? The Dalman Young year where the Orioles had played against the Tigers. The Orioles were really good. The Nationals were really good. The Nationals, however, ended up crapping out and getting knocked out in the wild card round that year. The Orioles went on to the ALDS. And it was kind of this talk of could we see both of these teams kind of make it out to the end that year. And I thought it was a lot of hype around both teams. And that really, that might've been the last time both teams were actually good at the same time. So I thought that kind of gave us a little bit of a glimpse of what it could be if you saw both teams kind of ascending at the same time. And look, we may see it happen again, because the Nationals have a really good young core. They've drafted well here, and they've got some money to spend. We'll see if the Learners actually put more money into that franchise. But I think for whatever reason, look, I think everybody knows the hierarchy. The Orioles are kind of over top of the Nationals, just simply off of longevity, simply off the history that they've had. I think out there in D.C., people are into the Nationals. There's a lot of people into the Orioles too. But I think baseball, contrary to football, you'll have people that are willing to play both sides of the aisle. I'm a stickler for it. In football, I think you should only have one team. I think it's kind of religious. In other sports, I think it's all right. We can give some wiggle room to having multiple teams, especially when you have two teams in the same area.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's move on. We need to talk some other things about defense. I'm going to go a little quicker here and pick up the pace, because I know you've got time requirements coming through. But we'll talk about a few things generally that was going on. The Ravens only allowed one first down rushing the entire game. That was to Daniels. It was just on a 3rd and 5, a little run left for 6, a little scramble that he did. That was it. So their running backs didn't get a single first down in the game. Ravens had 9 first downs and 176 yards rushing. In fact, the Ravens now have had a game with 175 plus yards rushing, where they've also held the opponents to 75 or fewer yards rushing 4 times this year in 6 games. The all-time record for that in a single season is 6 times. It was done by the 1973 Rams, the 2001 Steelers, and the 2019 Ravens, okay, were the 3 teams who did it. Those 3 teams had a combined 41-5 record in the regular season in those years. So it'd be a 15.2 win pace which the Ravens can't even do this year, even if they did it every game. But I'm looking at this Ravens team and I'm thinking this is a team that probably could do this multiple additional times. What they really need is to have games that they win by, you know, two or three touchdowns. When they do that, the other team's not going to be passing the second half. The Ravens are going to be running all over them. And I think this situation is going to show up just organically if that were to happen.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been the case a couple of times this year. You think back to that Dallas game. Dallas had to abandon the run pretty quickly this week against Washington. Their starting running back isn't there. They have Austin Ekeler, who at this point of his career is better served as a receiving back than he is an actual rusher. And McNichols is a third string running back who's had his moments. But again, I mean, he's a third string running back. So I did think the Ravens did a good job with that. Again, them being a really good rush defense combined with Washington not having their main horse kind of was the match made in heaven. I will give the Ravens credit on stopping some of those quarterback design runs that Jaden has had a lot of success on. They ran one in the red zone that I thought Nate Wiggins did a really good job of staying outside, forcing them to keep the play inside and kind of running Daniels out of bounds. Jaden has scored on that play multiple times this year, that same exact play with two pulling linemen to the right side. It didn't work against the Ravens. A couple of their quarterback design runs didn't work. So they, I think, going against Lamar Jackson, kind of having the prototype on your team of how to stop that stuff helps. But they stay true to their assignment and play really disciplined against him.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very proud of that, too. I thought that they had a full house backfield at one point where they still had a read option out of that. That we might be talking about the same play because the play was run right. And and Jaden kept the football and kept getting stretched out to the sideline.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if it is the same play.
I believe so. It was in the red zone, and that's kind of when they like to pull that play out. And Nate Wiggins, he just kind of sealed the edge and never really let him bounce it to the outside.
All right, let's talk about the Ravens defense in terms of what is not going right now. To me, one of the big things is they're not getting turnovers. And they have 29 passes defense, which are tied for seventh in the NFL. But they're still tied for 18th in interceptions with three. And by the way, that's a big group in there from 18th. It's like 18th to 21st, 22nd, 23rd. I forget what it is. But the three interceptions, totally unacceptable for 29 PDs. We've seen several times where hands are just not right. Our Darius Washington was basketing the ball that he took in the neck. You know, he said that's totally the wrong way. You got to have your hands up away from your body trying to catch that football. We've seen similar things from Wiggins not being able to. He had his hands up in both cases. He just couldn't collect the football. This has been a big problem. Now, there have been times in the past this has been an issue for the Ravens, but this team, they're getting to plenty of balls. They're just not collecting them. You look at every team who's up with them in terms of passive defense, and they've got more interceptions.
Yeah, it's kind of like, are we going to look at it that the cup is half full or half empty situation? Like, yeah, and one right, you could say that they're in position. They're there to make the play. The ball is finding them, but they're not catching it, you know. So maybe you can build on that in the hopes that at some point it'll even out and they will start to catch some of those passes. On the other end, it's like you got to take advantage of those opportunities because you just don't know how many you'll get. That ball Jaden threw to Ardarius Washington was his worst ball of the day. They didn't get another opportunity to kind of jump on a pass. So you just don't know. And these quarterbacks are so good. And as the year goes on, especially you talk about getting into the postseason, those opportunities are going to be less and less. So you got to capitalize when you have them. And considering that this defense has struggled in the pass game as is and has given up so many chunk plays, the concern is you can go from a play where it was almost an interception and the guy dropped the ball to a couple of plays later. Here they are finding the end zone now because you couldn't get them off the field when you had the chance. So that's kind of the difference between winning big games and losing big games when it's all said and done.
So contrary to what we saw this summer too, because the defense was just I slapping the offense back and forward with interceptions in terms of being able to find the football in the air, being, you know, able to collect it. And now they go into a season and they just can't seem to catch the football anymore. They've got dropitis. And it's a team with a ton of defensive playmakers. I mean, look, Marcus Williams and A. Jackson haven't played well, but they're both center fielders. They're both supposed to be center fielders. Brandon Stevens is not a ball production guy, but Marlon Humphrey is now at this point in his career. And Ardarius Washington should be. And, you know, they have, you know, Roquan Smith, he's got an interception this year already, but they've got playmakers on defense. They're just not converting picks. And it's very annoying. Anyway, let's move on to missed tackles for a second, because this is a big difference between the two teams coming into the game. The Ravens had the Commanders had a 14.6% missed tackle rate on the season. The Ravens at 11.2%. And then you look at the types of offenses each has. The Commanders without Brian Robinson, the Ravens with Henry for the game. And you'd think this would add up to a big difference in missed tackles. And I guess it kind of did. The Commanders had 5 missed tackles by PFF, but the Ravens only had 2. So it was really on defense that the Ravens had a very good game at avoiding missed tackles. They had one by Wiggins that was on the right sideline, gave about 5 yak away. And they had another one on a penetration from, I think it was Simpson, on a run right where it got tackled for 0 loss, but Simpson could have had him for -2. So it really only cost him about 7 yards on the whole football game. In terms of the Commanders and their tackling, has that been a problem that's been well talked about all year? I know they had a very high rate relative to the National Football League, relative to the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't have a lot of good players on that side of the ball. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. They have a lack of talent on defense. They brought in veterans like Bobby Wagner, and I thought Bobby played really well on Sunday, one of his better games of the season, honestly, just from the raw eye test. But I think, honestly, most of those missed tackles, because I thought they did a really good job on Derrick Henry specifically in the first half, not a lot of broken tackles for him. I thought the D lineman did a good job gang tackling and really taking him down by his legs, starting low, not trying to go for the shoulders. And obviously, as the game went on, especially in the fourth quarter when the Ravens needed to get a couple of first downs to ice the game, things started to change. Most of their missed tackles probably came in the secondary with Zay Flowers getting yak, being able to make a catch and then make the initial defender miss. He's just so good at that. I just think right now the Commanders' issues defensively is primarily due to a lack of talent. A lot of these guys that you're seeing play right now, I'd be surprised if you're seeing them start on this defense come next year.
Okay. All right, fair enough. So probably a defense-oriented draft. Let me jump into packages for a second. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because there are 56 defensive snaps. The Ravens were about as vanilla as you can get. They played one snap with 3 interior defensive linemen. That was negated by penalty at the goal line. It was the only time they did it. They played big nickel for 14 snaps. That had Hamilton at slot corner, Jackson every time at the strong safety position where he stayed the entire game in that big nickel package. And they allowed 5.6 yards per play. The standard nickel, they had 22 snaps. And again, I'm going through this quickly because I know you got time constraints, Cordell, but I want to hear your point on 2 important things at the end. Standard nickel, they had 22 snaps. Humphrey was at slot corner on all but 2 of those where he was taken out in goal line. Don't know really why they did it, but they did. You'd think Humphrey, a very physical player, normally stays in goal line, would be there, but he was out of there for Washington. And those standard nickel had Hamilton on the back end at strong safety. And then the third thing they played is dime. They played 20 snaps of that, just 79 yards allowed. That was one of the really nice things from this game, is they only allowed 4.0 yards per play in dime. This team now of Ravens teams is on pace. Well, the last 3 weeks they've played – last 4 weeks, sorry, they played 38% dime, which would be, if they kept up that rate, would make them the number 2 dime team in Ravens history. And that is not an insignificant fact. It's generally very good defenses or very good teams, sorry, let's put it that way, that get to play a lot of dime because they get leads and they're able to do a lot of it in the second half. And they also can play some on second and 10. They're perfectly happy to, which is, that's good. That means your dime personnel is good. But you know, when you have a big lead and you can just throw it out there every play of a second half, that's even better. That's when you pick up tons of snaps. But 42% for the 2019 team and 34.5% for the 2000 team, you're really talking about the cream of the Ravens crop.
And look, that's a part of why I think the pass defense has put on Front Street as much as they are right now, is because teams are having to throw the ball a lot against them. And this is still a passing league. I still do believe the rules are kind of orchestrated towards the offense, specifically in the pass game. So, yeah, it's a numbers game. Teams aren't going to keep running the ball when, A, they can't, and, B, when the score and situation is telling them that they have to throw the ball. So the Ravens, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a product of them playing with a lead. And I do wonder how much of it coaching wise is, look, let's just, you know, stay over top. Let's play it safer than not. How often are they being aggressive on the back end? Because really they just want to keep the play in front of them and just not allow teams to get some of the, granted they've given up chunk plays, but I just think it's a tough, that is a part of the context that should be brought up, is teams are forced to throw the ball against this Ravens defense probably more than that team would like to.
Right. I would agree. And I think, you know, they certainly have played a lot of prevent, a lot of tackling to keep people in bounds towards the end of the game, the Dallas game, Buffalo game less so, because both those coaches want to get that game over with. But the Commanders game, another exercise in it, in trying to tackle some players inbounds. Like the third and 20 show up. I thought Humphrey made a great play to make an 8-yard inbounds tackle to set up fourth and 12. But it was the kind of thing like that normally wouldn't be all that great a result, but it's a great result on third and 20 with that amount of time left in the game. So anyway, the two things I want to say about packages that were specific. The first we talked about earlier was Ardarius Washington taking over that strong safety role in the dime package. That is obviously an enormous part of what the Ravens do now. I think it's probably the precursor to Eddie Jackson being out of there on more plays. If Washington were to continue to play well, I think we'd see him. He might take over the strong safety spot entirely. And one of the things that's about to happen, if Arthur Mollett is coming back, where do you put him? I mean, if you put him back at slot corner, you're taking snaps away from two players, Washington and Wiggins, because Humphrey moves into the slot, allowing Wiggins to play on the outside. I don't think you want to do that. So I think they kind of have to make a move right now at strong safety. And they're kind of feeling it out and seeing if it'll work.
A part of me feels like maybe they could play Wiggins a little less. And which sounds probably crazy considering he's your first round pick. He's a young guy. You want to get him as many reps as you can. But I do feel like they're having to play him as much as they are, kind of out of necessity right now. It wouldn't shock me if Mollett comes back. I think they're going to put Mollett back as soon as he can play. I think he will play. I think that they're going to throw him back out there in that nickel slot, in that nickel spot, and kind of get back to some of the things that they did last year. Now, maybe that keeps Ardarius out there, and, you know, he could still be out there when they go to those three safety looks, because we saw Arthur Mollett play plenty of nickel last year, and they still were able to bring Hamilton up there on the other side and still blitz him and do all the things that they like him to do, be close to the line of scrimmage. But I think Wiggins probably would, I don't want to say be the odd man out, because I think he'll still play, but I do think he'd probably be the guy that has some of his snaps go down a little bit. I think teams look for him at times. I don't think it was a coincidence that they found him on that fourth down on the deep shot that they needed late in that game yesterday, because he is pretty grabby. He plays pretty aggressive. So I do think that they could probably look at it like they could scale him back a little bit, and maybe less is more with him. I'm not saying he's going to play 10 plays. I think they still want to play him. But I wouldn't be surprised if his percentage drops a little bit with Mollett coming back.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. And certainly, you know, this is the kind of problem. It's a great problem to have, because injuries will turn this non-problem into a real problem very quickly if you have exactly the right number of people to fill your spots. Right. So at corner, those guys get hurt. The other package thing I wanted to point out was the fact that the Ravens have moved almost exclusively, when they've had these four men active, to a buddy system of defensive linemen. So, and, you know, you look at my score sheet here and I see Jones and Madubuike are basically paired up every single time they're in the game. And they're, by the way, they're an outstanding complementary pass rush group. We've talked about that in past shows, but I'd love to hear your comments on that. And then Pearson Urban, who, by the way, are great friends. If you're around the team, these guys are always, you know, talking to each other and on the bench and whatnot. But they're playing together as well. I think another very fine pairing. Obviously, everybody has something to contribute. It's just that that Jones Madubuike pairing is just exceptional in terms of what it provides the pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, Madubuike, we know the type of talent that he is, coming off in a great year, a career year for him last year. And I think, you know, I didn't expect him to go out there and get double-digit sacks again. That's a lot to ask for an interior defensive pass rusher, defensive lineman. But I love when you talk about the combination between he and Jones. Madubuike is that perfect blend of speed and power. He's very agile. He has a great motor. I'm watching him week after week just drive guys back into the pocket. But then you also have those moments to where you blink and he's gone around you already. Whereas with Jones, you know what this dude is going to do. He is so strong. He is an absolute bull out there. And I love that his production is starting to show up on the stat sheet week after week as the year goes on. As an interior defensive lineman, you kind of accept that a lot of what you do isn't going to show up on the stat sheet. It's for guys that watch film to kind of see the impact that you're truly having out there. But I think with Travis Jones, he jumps out at you when you see him on the screen. I mean, he's so strong. I'm rewatching the game this morning, and I can't tell you how many times I'm seeing him. They are attempting to double team him, but this dude eats up the block. He sheds blocks so well, and he's so strong. I mean, he can grab a guy up with one arm and kind of keep him there. So, and he's starting to get to the quarterback more and more. I think the world of Travis Jones. I really do. And I think his motor has improved from his rookie year to now. I think you could clearly tell that his conditioning has picked up in a big way. And that's going to be good, because as they get to the back end of the season and you start to really look for some of those guys that you want on the field and the gotta have it downs, the downs where you gotta get a tackle for loss, or you want somebody to get some penetration and get to the quarterback, Travis Jones is going to be a hard guy to take off the field in some of those big games late in the year. So I'm really impressed with what he's done to this point.
Yeah, he really supplanted Pierce last year in terms of being their pass rush down guy. Pierce was playing great early in the year. I mean, what it took for Jones to get that job. But Jones, I look at him as more like Pernell McPhee. He's a much larger version of Pernell McPhee, obviously, but a guy who really drives this pass rush in a completely unknown way. But he is the one who forces single teams on Madubuike. They move him all around to get them, but Madubuike is a great one-on-one pass rusher. Mm-hmm. He's not as good when you put two guys on him. Nobody is, but his production really suffers. In terms of Travis Jones, he always commands a double team. He is an dare you to single me guy. And you know, the doubles he creates create all that opportunity. And it's not just the front four. It's if you blitz, if you do anything else, and they have to slide their protection somehow, boy, you're in a lot of trouble. And we saw, you know, it was nice to see Travis Jones finally pick up a sack in this game. I guess he's got a sack and a half now on the year, but those guys are an incredible pairing. I'm just what I'm so concerned about is that you wear them out by playing them for 15 straight snaps, you know, two times during the game. That is what really concerns me about the pairing. Not that they're not great together, because they are the perfect match. Even if you look back through all of Ravens history at guys where you had two rushing from the inside, which is not many, they're an outstanding pairing. All right, I'll tell you what, we're gonna call it here for the first part. I hope you'll join us for part two as well. Cordell, always great talking football with you. Where can folks find you online, and when can they listen to your shows? Because I know you're on everything now.
Yeah, busy time for sure. You can follow me at Cordell Woodland on Instagram and Twitter. I try to keep everybody up to date with what's going on with the Ravens. My show on Shaking It Up Sports, you can catch it on 105.7 The Fan. I'll have a show Wednesday night, so you could check me out then. You never know when you'll hear me filling in for some of the daytime shows. I actually be filling in for Bob on Vinny and Haney on Thursday morning from 10 to 2, so you could check me out then as well.
All right, outstanding. And Cordell, one of the people I really enjoy talking football with, I used to be on his show more regularly, but whenever you need me, Cordell, I'd love to come on again. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'm always looking for new ideas and new content. Please hit me up. I'll respond very quickly and get back to you. Cordell, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.